So on Sunday, before I left, the topic of the talk was impermanence, anicca. And then today, following up, this topic is dukkha, suffering. And sandwiched between the two talks is the death of my mother. And they're poignant for me. And it was good to be there. I was able to be with her when she died, holding her hand. And it was a peaceful death. I saw that something was happening because her breathing started to slow down. And I was sitting there holding her hand, watching, and slow down, and then there was no more breathing. And I wondered. And then there was a little hiccup, and then I knew that she was no longer alive. And so it was, but it was peaceful. Peaceful in this little room. She lived in a nursing home in a room that was the size of a maybe small monastic cell. She was very content in this room. I think she, and she was cared for well by people. And then when after she died, I stayed for a while, some hours with her, and late in the evening, and some of the staff of the nursing home, they knew her, you know, and they came in just to say goodbye to her and pay their respects. It was very touching to sit there and see their love for her after she had died. So the topic of today, dukkha, the topic of impermanence, of inconstancy, of change, as I said, is the usually talked about from the point of view of what we see. It's a task of seeing. And the task with dukkha is to feel, to sense, to experience. And I think that when there is life, there are all kinds of feelings. That to set the stage for meeting dukkha, I talked about well-being, just as set the stage for inconstancy, talked about stability. And well-being also belongs kind of to the world of feeling, sensing, experiencing, and the richness of that world, the range of what we can experience and sense, feelings, and the richness of it. And so you know, that sitting with my mother on Monday evening and being with her, so there, you know, was there much of the day, 9 hours with her, and then after she died I was there few hours. And it was very familiar to sit there in that kind of context. It was like being on retreat. And and then yesterday, the next day, was a day for something else to happen. Certainly to feel all the things that I could feel, and to make time for that. So my way of doing it was to go off into the one of the, up in the hills, Edgewood Park, some of you might know. And I walk slow. Just walk slow and steady, and just walked around and both intentionally and not intentionally, thought about my mother and my life with her and all kinds of things. It felt like an important time. Other parts of the day were taken up with family. It looked important to be there for my family at home. And then things like filling out paperwork. Turns out when people die, that's not over. And there's papers to be filled out. So it felt good, all kinds of things. So the feelings, you know, it was a rich with feelings yesterday. And it was nice to come back here, come back and feel the support and care of all of you in this context. And also the context of the retreat and being on retreat again, and the kind of intimacy and sense of richness that comes with, you know, being here for our experience, here and now, experiencing it and holding it in this kind of way that knowing and feeling and seeing can create such a rich context for our life. And what I've learned over these years of practice is how knowing and seeing and feeling can be done with freedom, can be done with in a clean, clear, open way. And that even when there is, you know, painful emotions, maybe not exactly suffering, but painful feelings, there's something very meaningful or very wonderful about having learned how to be open to them and present for them clearly, seeing and knowing and feeling, but with freedom, and let them move through and be here. And one of the things we learned a lot about is how often it isn't so simple and free and clean and clear and things just go through. But we add layers and layers of things on top of it. And some of the things we add on top is our resistance and our clinging and our conceits and our desires and our wants and aversions and our fears. And on one hand, we can say, of course. Of course, it's hard to be a human being. It's challenging. And it is that we don't have to accept that that's the way it is. All the layers we add on top. Certainly we accept or allow for the humanity of life and death and loss and all kinds of things. But to learn to be respectful and careful and caring for all those extra layers we put on top of it. Who knows why they're there? Who knows what... So I think of them sometimes as the rings of a tree that tells you not only how old the tree is, but what happened different years that the tree was growing up. You know, this drought year, wet year, and the size of the ring. And so with layers, we have all these rings of things that got added and built on over the years. that might have a lot to do with what happened to us throughout the years, wet years. Years of loneliness and being alone and lost, and years of tears and crying and all kinds of things. And so, you know, that's part of this path, is to respect that and not see any of it as a mistake, but to see it as part of the path that we're on. A path that's clearly not here just to be present and accept things as they are, which we kind of say. But that's we do that strategically and with profound reasons, but we do it so that we can work our way through those layers of additions and find freedom from the suffering that's added. Not the heaviness or the pain we might feel. You know, there was pain that I felt, the passing of my mom, or the whole experience in some ways, very poignant. And I don't know if pain, it doesn't seem quite the right word, but it's a much better word than suffering to describe what I was feeling. And that didn't seem to be a problem. It wasn't something that I had to... But I know what suffering is, adding to it. It's kind of the word that comes to mind right now. It's something that's grating, or something which is harmful, something which is oppressive, or that kind of burns, maybe sometimes inside, burns the heart. So we are on this path to end that burning, that to work through some of the layers to get to the other side. And and this way we do it on this path of vipassana, of insight, is a kind of paradigm shift from how people usually deal with their issues in their life. One of them is that it's not a self-improvement project. So it isn't that we're making ourselves a better self or something so we can get the local block prize as being the best human on the block. And it's not about having perfection, becoming a perfect person, perfect activities, perfect something. It's not about having exciting experiences. I'm glad you're not here for that, because you're not going to have too much to write home about. Wow, you know, like that broccoli salad, that was like, that was like a highlight. What did you do for 3 weeks? Broccoli salad? That's it. I climbed Mount Everest. What did you have? Broccoli salad? So, you know, and some people and meditators are looking for meditation experiences to have so they can write home about that. But it's not really about having experiences, though experiences have a role in all this. So one of the radical ways in which we're practicing here, not automatically, but the kind of the direction we're going, is a radical simplicity. That if you're told that right up front, it might seem almost insulting that you're being, you know, because you're, you know, we're sophisticated people. But the radical simplicity with our experience, and when we turn the corner of practice, where the knowing and the seeing and all that opens up to, discovers these three characteristics. Those are being experienced. Those are a radically simple way of experiencing our life. So the first one, which anicca, which probably more literally means inconstancy than it does impermanence, because the emphasis in Vipassana practice, as we get quieter, is to begin appreciating how things come and go. Whereas the idea of impermanence, some people implies that things come to an end. But things come and they go and arise and pass, appear and disappear in so many different ways, and beginning to tune into all the different ways that they arise and pass. And as I emphasized, including, it is not just the experiences we have that arise and pass, because some of them don't seem to arise and pass. Certainly not fast enough sometimes. But some of them, but also seeing the arising and passing of how we perceive it, how we know it. Because the perceiving of things and the thing are not separate in our experience of them. The way we perceive them, we are part of the process of perception. And so sometimes the knowing, that sometimes that seems inconstant and comes and goes. But with the first characteristic, the simplicity of the experience has to do with simply seeing its changing nature. And it doesn't matter what the experience is, what the thing is. It could be the best lunch you've ever had in your life. That too is rising and passing. It could be just the worst something that you've seen. It could be a terrible thing that's happening for you. At this stage of practice, so I want to contextualize what we're talking about. When the mind is settled and quiet and peaceful and enough, then what's seen is that no matter what it is, what stands out in highlight is it just something arising and passing, more than what it actually is. So that's one of the ways it becomes a radically simple. We can be so focused on what something is and what it'll do for us and what it means and you know what's supposed to happen and all these more things that are more complicated. But if we just kind of float in the river, just kind of see the river go by, it's maybe the movement of the river that is the salient issue. What makes the river so wonderful is the fact that it's flowing. And maybe it doesn't matter what it's been called, what the name of the river is, or the fact that the river is at 100 feet elevation or 1,000 feet elevation, or that it's the water is more green than it is blue. What matters mostly is that it's changing and flowing. So then we come to the second characteristic, that of dukkha. And what's radical about this is there also the emphasis is not on what the experience is. It's just recognizing that there is something in the experience, if there might be, that is this extra grating thing, this extra stress, tension, this extra sense of oppression or burning by something. And again, it doesn't matter what the thing is, where it came from, why it's here, all the reasons for it, which some people, that's what they're oriented around. Something feels uncomfortable. Someone is to blame. Where should I put the blame today? Or I got to figure out why this happened to me. Or what does it say about me as a person that I should be having this? I've known people who felt that anytime they were suffering, that was a personal failure, proof of failing as a human being. So there's all these layers of complexity, but at the level of these basic insights, what we're oriented to now is just to feel, to know, oh, this is dukkha. And we don't have to know so much more about it. It can be kind of be a relief. Oh, just dukkha. Sometimes it's big, intense. Sometimes it's mild. It's dukkha. But the purpose of seeing dukkha like this is to see it too is characterized by inconstancy. It too appears and disappears, comes and goes, changes and morphs and oscillates and shifts. This too belongs to the world of change. And it makes a world of difference to see that that's the case. For one thing, we understand that it's not constant. And constancy is really oppressive. It's like it doesn't let up. But when the mind, in this context of what we're doing here, so you have to be very careful not to generalize these teachings into our everyday life, where it's kind of different kind of rules apply almost. But when we get quiet and settle enough, we start seeing that the dukkha is not constant. Maybe we can see there are tiny, teeny gaps between it. We start seeing that in fact the mind moves. Yes, my heart felt so sad and pained and something. But then, you know, yes, it was like nonstop, you know. That's what it was, you know. Let me tell you. Tell your friends that it was just pure suffering. But then if you go look carefully, quietly, peacefully here, in this context, you see actually the mind is actually kind of a little bit fickle. And the mind is not that loyal to your cause sometimes. And so, you know, it suffers well. No, maybe it knows. Maybe some minds know how to suffer better than others. They've kind of perfected the skill. But then, you know, it's thinking about broccoli salad. That was really good. I wonder if they have the recipe. Oh, I forgot. I'm supposed to be suffering. And it might happen, you know, just a few moments between sufferings, but, you know, the broccoli salad got in the way. How could it? I have to write a letter to IRC and say, you know, you know, I was really right there with my suffering and suffering well, and you interfered with. So all these things can happen, right? I mean, might be small and fleeting, but it turns out after a while, the inconstancy, the shifting and changing world that we're living in, the suffering no longer feels so solid, so heavy, or so... It starts to break up, it starts to have gaps, there starts to be a feeling that... And then we start to see better what is going on. Somehow we might start seeing our contribution to it. That maybe there's a really strong compulsion or attachment to something that is involved. That might be easier to see if it seems shifting and changing than if it's just a solid block. You know, the black box, you can't get in it, inside of it. But when it starts kind of shifting and changing, it's kind of like the box has opened. And there's more richness, more variety, more things to be seen in there. And and so starting to see the arising and passing begins to soften the fixations in the mind has. Starts softening the fixation it might have on its attachment, fixations it has on being the experiencer. Because when there's dukkha, part of what can be oppressive and difficult is it's happening to me. I'm the victim of life. If it wasn't for life, which is, you know, I shouldn't make light of what people decide based on that kind of idea. But so here in the seeing dukkha, the radical simplicity of it is at this point in practice, it doesn't matter your particular flavor of dukkha, 32 flavors of dukkha, it doesn't matter which flavor you have. The person next to you might have a better flavor, right? You know, certainly, you know, I mean, I had so much doubt about myself, my early practice, that, you know, whatever I was doing was wrong. Didn't matter. It was an equal opportunity attitude, and everything's wrong about me. And so certainly if I was suffering, I was suffering in the wrong way too. But it doesn't matter what flavor. It's just suffering. And we can start at some point, we start seeing that suffering is part of this river of change and movement and breaks up its solidity. And it gets more interesting because when we see when it comes and goes, those moments that it goes, that's not there, the gaps in it, those gaps are dukkha-free. And if that gap is clear enough, if that pause we don't fill it with, you know, getting recipes for broccoli salad, but we really kind of have there's like a real gap, an absence there. Things arise and they cease for a moment. It reveals something. It makes room for something that's kind of radical, kind of phenomenal. And that is, it reveals the onward leading nature of this path, of this practice. That it's not only seeing arising and passing of things, the inconstancy of things, but it's getting a sense there is an alternative. There is freedom. There is non-clinging. There is non-suffering. There is a possibility for a whole other way of being. And for some people, this is revolutionary. Some people have only known that life is suffering. But life isn't just suffering. If that's all you know, then, you know, it's pretty depressing, I think. But there is an alternative. And so in the ceasing of it, however short that is, it shows you that there's a way, there's a path to freedom. And to make this radically, even radically, maybe too radically simple, as we're practicing, there are three different ways we can experience things. There can be the way that it's an ouch, ouch. There's a way that we experience things that's an ah. And there's something in between that rarely happens. Neither. And as we practice and start seeing more clearly the inconstancy, the change, where the ouches are, where the ahs are, it becomes clear that some choices we make, some paths that we take, some things that we're doing, is on a path of ouches. And some things we do are paths to ah. And at this point in practice can, we can see, you know, the ah is a better option. Ah. We can see that the difference between something which is unhealthy for us and healthy for us. It could be that we're sitting quietly and we're obsessing about broccoli salad recipes. And upset because your local supermarket doesn't sell broccoli, and how could it? What are you going to do about it when you get home? And you can feel the ouch of that. And you can see, well, if I, you know, this is not a good way to expend my precious life. That, and you can see there's an ah. And the ah is not to do that anymore. Oh, what a relief. I put it down. I'm back here, present in the simplicity of this moment. That's an ah. We're doing our practice, and maybe there's a wonderful feeling of joy arises in the practice. And then there's, how am I going to make sure this stays? I'm going to have to plan carefully what I do during the walking period. I'll walk down the steps just like that, and this and that, and hold on to it and not shake anything up, and I won't look around. And if you pay attention to the mind that's doing that planning, there is an ouch there. It doesn't feel good. And where's the ah? It can be as simple as not doing that. Cool it, Gil. Just be with the joy. That's ah. Then now the joy goes away. There's an ouch and an ah. So as we start, as the dukkha breaks up and is not so solid, when we, in this world of the river, of this change and flow that's always here, it's not like it's not here, it's always here. But really, we start seeing it and feeling it and understanding it, knowing it, that we can choose the ah. And the greatest awe, the most wonderful awe, is mostly an absence. It's mostly what we don't do. What we don't pick up. It's leaving things alone, letting things be. Not because we're supposed to just be couch potatoes or something, you know, passive, but rather that in the awe of not picking anything up allows for the something, I like to call it the Dharma, something to move through us. Something gets awakened, something shifts, something has a chance to relax further, let go further. Something gets released. Something opens up that something moves through us. And it becomes clear that any clinging to it, grabbing onto it, any conceit that this is happening to me, or I should have this better, or this I deserve this, or anything, or it's not happening fast enough, or it's not happening to me, I'm, it's 4:38. By now I should have had it. All these are ouches. And there's another way. There's the ah. And the radicalness about this approach, this orientation, is that it's so applicable in so many different circumstances without having to understand all the details of the event and the history of it. And it doesn't put any blame on anyone, doesn't put any, it doesn't involve anger or despair, or just very simple, oh, there's an ouch. Don't have to do that. There's an ouch. I know I don't have to do it, but it's happening anyway. It shouldn't be. Well, that's the ouch. There's an ouch, and it doesn't seem to go away. And I guess that's how it is. Oh, that's the ah. Where's the ouch? Where's the ah? Where's the opening? Where's the closing? Where's the contracting? Where's the expanding? Where's the turning on the light? Where's the obscuring? The clouding over? Where's the ease? Where's the unease? Here. What can we find? In the simplicity of this moment, without all the complexities of how we can be thinking about it and planning and remembering and figuring out. So that I propose that this is a kind of a paradigm shift this way, this kind of simplicity. That becomes appropriate at some periods, maybe some sittings of the day, not even the whole day of a retreat. Sometimes, we need to not just know change and impermanence, we have to recognize clearly, oh, this is sadness, this is anger, this is thinking, what it actually is, we need more. But as we get more and more settled, quiet, stable, at some point, there's the opportunity of this new way of experiencing things, which is seeing the inconstancy, the change, the river of change rising and passing, and knowing dukkha in this new way, in a different way than usual. And it's a way that can support us to begin letting go of the clinging. When things are constantly changing and coming and going, it doesn't quite make sense to grasp on and hold on to them or resist it. It kind of doesn't work. it kind of like resisting, grabbing, doing something. I mean, we've, you know, the river was frozen all winter long. It finally thawed, so you could it's flowing and you can float in it. And then you grab it or resist it, and lo and behold, you just froze it again. That didn't work. You know, so the freezing of our lives, the freezing up, the solidifying of things that we do so quickly and easily, to stay in the softness of how things change and move and shift. So I'd like to end by mentioning that this seeing, starting to see the inconstancy of dukkha, seeing not just dukkha but the arising and passing of all kinds of things, that it does, it can, but not automatically, but it does sometimes give us a clear sense, this is the way forward. This is the way towards freedom. This is the way towards living from this place of freedom. And so it's not only in this practice about just sitting down and just being present for how things are. There is, how things are includes seeing that open door that's open for us. Seeing that we're on top of the slide, and this, if you go on the slide, it will take you into the river. You could just sit on top of the slide and look at the river going by forever if you want. It's nice to be high up and look. But, you know, you want to be in the flow. So you have to be, so you sense, oh, there's a slide, there's a directionality, there's a movement towards, there's a desire for that direction. There is something there that's healthy. The path is there for us. And I think that in our scene, that Buddhist scene, we don't actually mention this very much, because there's such a strong emphasis on just accepting the present moment and just seeing for what is without anything more. But it's, as a practice gets to a certain point, there is also seeing a path, a direction, a way of practicing, a way of living. That is the ah, one of the best ahs, the ah of freedom. So in giving this talk, it would be really wonderful, I think, one conclusion of it, impact it has, is that you now will never again be afraid to suffer. And then your friend who climbed the Mount Everest said, what happened to you? Asks you, well, what did you do for your 3 weeks? You can say, oh, I learned to suffer better. And it wasn't just a broccoli salad? No, no. And probably your friend will be perplexed. What? Suffer better? And, but your kind of smile and the glint in your eyes, and clearly there's something more going on than just suffering better, the fact that you're like so happy. Wow. I just got frostbite. Your friend says, but what happened to you? your big smile and you're saying you'd like to suffer better. Well, that just doesn't compute. Anyway, I hope you're not afraid to suffer. I hope that you can sit still, stable, call upon whatever well-being that there might be. Call upon your confidence in the Dharma. And sit quietly, peacefully, willingly, untroubled by your dukkha. It's just dukkha. You don't have to even care what flavor it is. And then see it. Maybe slowly you'll begin to see that it's not so solid. It's inconstant. And now, maybe you'll get curious. These Buddhists, what is it about inconstancy that's so important? And you'll be so curious that you'll hang out to find out. May you discover the joys and the freedom that awaits a kind of being in that river of change.